Okay, everybody, thank you very much for your patience. Figured give everyone a little chance to enjoy some of the cholent and refreshments. Thank you very much, Tamar and Elisheva and Rebecca for hosting. And thank you everyone for coming. Because what we have to discuss is something which really becomes more and more relevant every single day of our lives. If you look at the numbers that were put out at the end of 2012, e-commerce in North America, I'm sorry, in the United States, comprised a total of $225.5 billion of transactions, which is really mind-blowing when you think about it. And it comes out to about 5% of the total retail transactions that take place in the entire country. So really it's something which is ubiquitous, more and more ubiquitous, not just on our computers, on our phones, and everything else that that has a Wi-Fi or a cellular signal on it. So it's important to take a step back and as it becomes more and more relevant to appreciate how it affects us on a halachic level. Because obviously the more complicated things get, the more we have to take into account laws of Shabbos, laws of Yontif, and see how what has become an extremely convenient, money-saving, and easy way to shop, especially if you live in the city and can't just hop in a car and go to the mall. Well, yeah, I'm on a train, I'll go to the mall, but sometimes it's just easier to stay at home and shop from there, and you can get better prices. But let's take a look, actually take a step back, before we talk about e-commerce per se, and we'll discuss the laws of Shabbos and Yontif as they pertain to general business transactions, how we even know in the first place that there's a notion of a prohibition that covers buying and selling as they do in a normal retail setup, walking to a store, walking to the market, tracing back to long before there were ever computers. I apologize. Can I have a copy of the, I don't know who has the extra ones? Thank you. Yeah? All right. I appreciate it. Okay, let's start with source number one. So it's very interesting. The Gemara sort of tells us this through the back door instead of giving it giving us the information straightforwardly as follows. Number one is a Mishnah in the Gemara that follows in Beis Daf Lamed Zayin. Elohim Mishum Mitzvah Lomakdishin Vlomarichin Vlomachrimin Gezeir Mishum Ekachom Emkar. Okay, so the Chazal are discussing what we would say the broader topic of transactions beyond actually buying and selling. Makdishin means to consecrate something, to dedicate it to the Beis HaMikdash, to make it hektish. Marichin, also erichin, is another form of making donation to hektish, to the Beis HaMikdash. Below machrimin, a third form. None of these methods of transferring ownership of your personal possessions, your money, to hektish, to the Beis HaMikdash, is permissible on Shabbos. Gezeiru mishum ekachom emkar. Why? Because even though it's not actually mekach lememkar, which henceforth we're just going to translate as buying and selling business transactions in the classic sense, but it seems to resemble that in some way. And the implication is that you can't do these things because you might come to do something which is actually mekach lememkar. Okay, so then we have to ask ourselves, what is the issue of mekach lememkar on Shabbos and Yontif to begin with? So Rashi fills us in. Rashi actually gives us two different explanations. With certainly a gap between them, we'll take one at a time and examine them a little more closely. The first line in Rashi, it's still part of that first source, right beneath the Gemara we just read. Mishum mekach lememkar, dilo mekach lememkar damo. These forms of transaction, again, forms of dedicating things to the Beis HaMikdash, they are similar to mekach lememkar. Shem motzi mirshuso lirshus hektish. On what level? In the sense that you're taking something out of your own possession and you are putting it into the possession of the Beis HaMikdash. Umekach lememkar asur min hamikra. So why is there a problem with mekach lememkar business in the first place? Dechsiv mimtzo cheftecha v'davar davar. Rashi quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya, which you find in source number two. Actually, two pasukim here to get the whole picture. Im tashiv mishabas raglecha. If you refrain from going because of Shabbos, asos chafetzecha, to be engaged in your chafatzim, your own interests, your own affairs, biyom kachi, on my holy day, this is obviously Hashem speaking, the karasul haShabbos oneg, lekdosh Hashem mechubad. And instead of engaging in your own personal affairs, what do? You direct Shabbos in a way which allows you to enjoy it and honor it for the holiness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu imbues in that day. The chibadito me'asos derachecha, how exactly do you honor it? You honor it me'asos derachecha, from, again, refraining from going on your normal way, mimtzo cheftzecha, from being engaged in your personal affairs, your personal desires, v'davar davar, and from engaging in speech, discussions that are also not in the spirit of the day. So if a person, in fact, does this and keeps the spirit of Shabbos appropriately, oz tisanegal Hashem, so then the next pasuk tells us, then he will truly enjoy the closeness to God, and v'rakavticha al b'mesei aretz, other promises, other brachas that Hashem will bestow upon the person who properly honors the Shabbos. Okay, now that pasuk seemed to give us a number of elements, a number of components that define how we're supposed to honor the day. If you look at source number 3, Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Yud Gimel, Amar Aleph, explicates a little bit of what each of those components are referring to. You shall honor the Shabbos by refraining from your from going your normal way. The first way in which we honor Shabbos, something we're very familiar with, is that we dress differently. A person should have a separate set of clothing that's unique for Shabbos and differentiates from the way they dress during the week. Interestingly, Yontif actually has its own set of you're supposed to have a separate set of clothing for Yontif. If you have a choice between you get a new outfit and it's a 3-day Yontif, the 2 days of Yontif and followed by Shabbos, and you have a choice when I should put on that new outfit. Should I put it on Shabbos? Should I wait for Shabbos, or should I use it for the Yontif that precedes it? So I think the halacha is you're supposed to save it. You're supposed to use it on Yontif. Because Yontif actually has a higher degree of necessitating honor when it comes up against Shabbos. But in any case, we're definitely trying to differentiate between that and how we dress during the week. Now, Solster Chacha, the Gemara discusses further what are the ways in which we can differentiate between Shabbos and the rest of the week. Shlo yehi luchach shel Shabbos ki luchach shel chol. A person should walk differently. A person's supposed to walk more slowly, more deliberately, and to be more at ease, to be more at rest, rather than the speed at which one runs during the week because of wherever they happen to be going. Mimtza cheftzecha, from being engaged in your affairs, chafetzecha asurin, cheftzei shamayim mutarin. So here we have one more clause that the pasuk tells us that certain types of engagements, as long as they're cheftzei shamayim, as long as they have a mitzvah purpose, some we'll say divinely ordained purpose, so then it's permissible. But if it's something which is completely my own affair, something which involves my parnasa, that's the context we're using it right now, so that is prohibited on Shabbos. So this is the basis, according to Rashi's first explanation, of the prohibition against doing business altogether on Shabbos and Yontif. So it's important because this is coming from a pasuk. It's coming from a source in the Tanakh, in Yeshaya. Whereas if you jump back to that first source, the second part of the first source, Rashi, there's an Inami on the second line where we left off after Yeshayahu Nun Ches, where Rashi switches gears, going from the first explanation, which was based on a pasuk in Yeshaya, and now he says, Mekach HaMemkar Asi Leksiva Shtari Mechira. Maybe the reason instead why it is that we prohibit doing business on Shabbos has nothing to do with the pasuk per se, but rather it's a Gzeirah Chazal, we're afraid, as is common in just about every type of transaction we make. There's a record, okay? Maybe in the old days there was a ledger and the storekeeper wrote down who bought, who sold merchandise. Nowadays it's all done automatically, whether it's recorded on a computer or there's a printout, of a receipt when you swipe your card, as the case may be. But it definitely will involve some sort of ksiva, some sort of writing of a record of the sale. Generally does, and therefore, in order to prevent one from coming to write on Shabbos, which is one of the 39 malachos. So therefore, Chazal came along and said, midrabanan, that one should not engage in business. Okay, so we have two very distinct approaches. Again, the first one is that it's a pasuk in Tanakh. The second one is a pasuk, is a source from the gezeiros of Chazal. Yeah, go ahead.
Is this common that we have a gezeira on a gezeira?
Excellent question. So excellent that Rashi himself asks it, okay, in the very next words. Vimtomar havi l'gzeira l'gzeira, kulachat gzeirhi. Okay, it's okay. It's a great question. Again, as I said, Rashi asked it himself. So I don't want to get too sidetracked. That's why I didn't read it in context. But basically, there is a mechanism that Chazal used. We find it throughout Shas. We find it in cases like this, where yes, in theory, it's accurate that it's two steps removed. But sometimes Chazal in the initial gezeira put that in place because they saw the need for an additional level of protection, because it's so common, again, that that every business transaction is going to have some sort of record that's written up. Okay, if you look at number 4, so the Rambam seems to adopt the second approach in Rashi. Hilcha Shabbos, Perachav Gimel, Halacha Yud Beis, V'chein Asr Liknos V'limkor. One may not purchase or sell, V'liskor, or to rent, or haskir, means to rent out to somebody else. Gezeira Shem Yichtov, these types of transactions are subsumed under the Gezeira that, again, is intended to distance a person from writing. Okay, so we have a pasuk in Tanakh, in Nevi'im, we have a Gezeira Midrabanan, and source number 5 is a different spin based on the Ramban and Parshas Emor, which you guessed it is going to give us a source in the Torah itself. Okay, the background of this Ramban is that we're aware that the Torah in many places says, Lo sasu melacha, right? On Shabbos, thou shalt not do any melacha, any one of these 39 melachas. It's a negative commandment. But we also find elsewhere that the Torah adds, besides that negative commandment, a positive commandment of Shabbason, that Shabbos is intended to be a day of rest. Beyond just don't do this, you also have to treat it as a day of rest. And the question is, what exactly does that say? What does that positive commandment add to what's already prohibited through the negative laws, the los essays? So the many Rishonim are of the opinion that it really is not coming to add anything at all. It's just that anything that is prohibited already with a los essay also has this additional level of stringency, the assay that's added onto it. And when if you flip a light on Shabbos, okay, and you violate one of the malachos, you drive a car. If you count up your scorecard in Shemayim, so you violated a los assay and you violated an assay as well. But it's not really coming to add anything. However, the Ramban does believe that this additional pasuk of Shabbason that requires Shabbos to be, as we refer to it, a day of rest, indeed comes to increase the scope and add another level of observance as follows. Take a look inside. Nearly, Ramban adding his own original pshat. Shamedrash hazel lomar shenitzavinu min haTorah lios lano menucha b'yantif. He's referring to yantif, but the context is extended to Shabbos as well. But the specific pasuk is in regard to yantif. He says, we are commanded min haTorah, the Torah itself. The Doraisa tells us that yantif should be a day of rest. Afilu midvarim she'inu melacha. According to the Ramban, Shabbason is coming to add even those things that are not, strictly speaking, one of the 39 melachos. Lo sheyitzrach kol yom limdod hatfuos. You're gonna go into your shop and you're gonna measure your grain, whatever it is you happen to be selling. Lishkol haperos, to weigh the fruit. Bahamatanos ulamale hachavios yain. You're gonna fill up your barrels with wine for sale. Lifnos hakelim. You're gonna move all types of items. You'll clear out. You'll do spring cleaning. Bagamavanim. You're gonna move around all kinds of heavy rocks. Mibayis labayis. Mimakom lamakom. From house to house. From one place to another. As long as you have a valid Eruv, you happen to be, let's say, in a walled city, what are you going to do? You're going to turn Shabbos into a weekday. You omsim al chamorim, you're going to load up your donkeys, vavyayin v'anavim u'te'inim, chomasi yaviyu b'yantiv, you'll transfer everything that it is you need to transfer, v'yashuk malei l'chol makal chomemkar. If we really just were limiting the laws of Shabbos to those 39 malachos, you could essentially have a regular workday, you could have a regular day where the market is fully functional, fully operational, and you wouldn't know the difference. Tia hachanas psucha, the stores will be open, v'chen v'ni makiv, the storekeeper will be sitting there, v'ashulchanim al shulchanim, v'azuhuvim l'fenehem, the money changers will be exchanging coins, because everything he's listed so far is only prohibited midrabanan, such as the last thing we read, money changers exchanging coins. So coins are mukta, okay, we don't move monetary devices, we don't use currency, because currency is mukta. You get the point. Okay, throughout this Ramban, he's giving a whole list of things which are not subsumed under the 39 malachos, strictly speaking, but at the same time, it's inconceivable that the Torah would allow Shabbos, which is supposed to be a day where everything stops, to also be a day where it doesn't stop. So therefore, the Torah itself comes and adds this additional level of rest, Shabbason, beyond the 39 malachos and says, it's obviously going to include business transactions, as we discussed, and this will be the source for prohibiting. Hold on one second, sorry. Business transactions on Shabbos on a Doraisa level. Okay, we just want to add a slight qualification. The Chassam Sofer tells us that, in his opinion, the Ramban should not be as far-reaching as I just presented it. He makes the following distinction. Let's say once in a blue moon, I'm walking down the street, I look in the window, and there's a sale that's just irresistible. It's going to be over today, and I got to get this, whatever it is that's in the window, and I walk in, I can't control myself, and I make a purchase. Okay, so that the Ramban would tell you, is not actually a prohibition on a Doraisa level of Shabbason, That would be maybe like Rashi tells us, Derabbanan, or maybe from the Pasuk in Yeshaya, but maybe the Ramban only meant that someone who is fully engaged, consistently, on a huge scale, he's going to work just like he would go to work any other day. That's what we mean to prohibit when we talk about Shabbason, that mitzvah midoraisa. Whereas the simple one time, I couldn't resist, you know, here and there, so that, in fact, that doesn't kill my whole Shabbos. It doesn't kill my whole Shabbos, but on the contrary, maybe I'll be thrilled that I walked home with a great buy. But, So to that extent, the Chassam Sofer would say, we can adopt Rashi, we can adopt the Rambam, that it's a Derabbanan, or from Divrei Kabbalah, otherwise known as a Navi. But certainly, if you have a full-scale operation, consistently, so that's what the Ramban would be coming to prohibit through the Pasuk of Shabbosan. Yeah, go ahead. I thought you had a question. Okay. All right, so we've laid out the three different possibilities, Araisa, Derabbanan, Navi. We accept any of those three as valid sources for Dinim. And now we're going to use that basis, the prohibition of Mekach HaMemkor on Shabbos and Yontif, to talk a little more about our subject at hand. Now, again, we don't even think about what goes on when you purchase something at Amazon. Amazon is the largest retailer in the world, I think. And I think Staples is like number two, something like that. And Amazon is like three times as big as Staples. So it just gives you an idea. I actually looked up some numbers yesterday. Total sales. Total sales in the world, I think, for Amazon up 27% since 2011 to 2012, which is also a mind-blowing number, $61.09 billion. So I said the total was 225.5, so this was more than 25% of all of the sales combined, okay, were Amazon alone. Okay, again, unbelievable numbers.
Largest online retailer.
Largest online retailer, correct. But we're not always thinking about what's actually going on behind the scenes. So Amazon is not a great example because, as you're familiar, a place like Amazon connects buyers to a whole, you know, thousands of vendors, people who are selling from their basement, people who are selling from stores, and Amazon's own warehouses. Actually, the breadth of Amazon's stock comes into place. Someone asked me, Shiloh's after Pesach this year, Chamesh Avril of Pesach, right? We're always trying to figure out when things were bought, when things were sold, is the owner Jewish or not? And I forget the details, but someone bought something from Amazon, and it took him so long to figure out who was actually holding on to the merchandise when Pesach came around, because sometimes it's hard to know when Amazon sells something where it's actually being stored and who actually is the owner of it until it gets to you. But I remember back in the days when Zappos was just shoes, okay, just to date myself, about 7 or 8 years. So it was a relatively new company. A friend of mine told me his brother, they have all kinds of accessories, and I think so. I haven't been there in a while, but... Okay. So maybe... Am I off? Tell me if I'm wrong. Okay, sure. All right, whatever. Okay, I apologize. I could be very wrong. I have not purchased anything from there in a long time. Okay. Anyway, so a friend of mine has a brother who's works for a venture capital firm. And I think Zappos invited them to come down, see their operation, because they were looking for someone to put some money into the company. And he said he watched from start to finish how the order came in from online. The order was sent to a robot in the warehouse, rolls down the aisle, and then an arm comes up, takes the shoes off the shelf, brings down the shoes, takes a UPS sticker, prints it out, slaps it on the box of shoes, and then sends it down a chute to the UPS truck. Okay, so when you think about it, an operation like that, and there's hundreds and thousands of businesses that are working like that, there is zero human involvement altogether. Zero human involvement. Okay, it means that at the end of the day, so they have managers and they have analysts, you know, that are reviewing all the orders that come in, and there's got to be quality control to make sure that the right shoes end up in the right box with the right sticker on them. But bottom line, the actual transaction includes, at least on the seller's end, okay, no human beings. Okay, now I'm emphasizing the seller side because now as we move into the topic of e-commerce, I want to make it very clear. You know, I'm all in favor of kulas, and I like to make things as easy as possible within the bounds of halacha. But one thing we're not going to come out with today is that you can turn on your computer on Shabbos and order something from Zappos, and be happy with the robot sending it to your house. most of what we're gonna start with, okay, is owning a website that's open on Shabbos, and then hopefully by the end we'll talk a little bit about eBay, because auctions are that's a primary framework for where the purchase can be made. Again, you're going onto your computer before Shabbos, but as we all know, the auction may end on Shabbos, and we need to think about how that plays out again halachically. Okay, so we're gonna focus more on the seller. All right, now ask you a random question. Okay, we will bring this back to our topic at hand. Anyone attend a pigeon event? In your lifetime, most people, okay. Anyone ever attend a pigeon event on Shabbos? Anyone ever attend a bris on Shabbos? Okay, we had twins almost 3 years ago, twin boys, two bris on Shabbos in the same week. Thank God they're doing fine, Baruch Hashem, 3 years later. But for some reason, even though you can do a bris on Shabbos, you don't have a pigeon event on Shabbos. The question is, why not? Okay, so believe it or not, it actually intersects with what we've been discussing up until now. Look at source number 6. Right, the way we introduced the subject was to say that Chazal had a bigger umbrella that encompassed not just actually walking to the store, putting down money, swiping your credit card, but other things which resemble transfer of ownership. Excuse me, and as we see in Shulchan Aruch, there are other applications. In Dunin, we don't run a Din Torah. We don't orchestrate a court case. Lomakdishin, that's what we saw before. Lomakachim, you cannot do Kedushin, the precursor of marriage. Lecholtzin, Chalitza, Vlomiyabmin, Yibam, Lomakdishin. Again, the Tzad HaShav, the common denominator between all these is that it's a form of transaction. Getting married, whether Kedushin, Chalitza, and Yibam, all those halachically are engendered with the normal means of transactions of Kinyanim that we find in other areas of halacha. So they're all subsumed under that topic. I was walking out of my building this morning. I think someone in my building gets Mishpacha magazine. And it said on the cover, Chuppah at 10, followed by Kiddush, the return of the Friday wedding. I don't know what that means. But the truth is, in the old days, I didn't read the article, not my magazine, but in the old days, and we're not talking about that far, we're talking about 50, 60 years ago and a little bit beforehand, certainly in Europe, people could not afford not just, you know, a 10-piece band and a nice hall and fancy food. They could not afford anything, and therefore the way to save money, actually two things, to save money for, in putting together the chasana, was to get married on Friday, late Friday afternoon, and hold the chuppah shortly before Shabbos, because it has to be over, you know, the wedding ceremony has to actually be over before Shabbos, and then the suda, the very first suda, the suda of the chasana, was also the Friday night meal, okay? Because this way they could save on the preparations, and again, they simply couldn't afford much more. They also used to have multiple weddings at the same time, also to combine. And so recently, if I'm not mistaken, someone told me this, Rabbi, anyone here from Maryland, Baltimore, Silver Spring? So, Rav Aaron Lapiansky, right? Familiar with that name? I think the Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva in Silver Spring. So he married one of the daughters of the Rosh Yeshiva of Mir of Yerushalayim. And again, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, and he said his wedding was in the dining room of the Mir on a Friday afternoon. Okay, so just to put things in perspective, Baruch Hashem, you know, well, we're not in such dire straits, but that's why we have to talk about, again, in a very practical sense, you can't get married on Shabbos. You can do it right before Shabbos, but not on Shabbos itself. Okay, Lomach Rishon, Trumas and Maestras, you cannot separate Trumas and Maestras, also a form of transaction because you are assigning something to the property of the Kohen, of the Levi, and here's our line in bold, Ein Podin Haben, you cannot redeem the firstborn son, no Pigeon Haben. Okay, so by now, you probably got the impression that pigeon haben also is a form of transaction, right? However it's done, okay, what I do is I give my 5 silver coins to the Kohen, and he's nice enough to let me take take back the child. Okay, so that is a form of transaction. Again, it's not in the classic sense, but this is all subsumed under what we have accepted as being prohibited under the rubric of Mekach HaMemkar on Shabbos. And that's why even if the baby turns 30 full days and lands on Shabbos, so you're not going to have the pigeon event take place on Shabbos. Okay, now hold that thought. Okay, what do we have so far? No pigeon event on Shabbos, and the general prohibition of Mekach u'Memkor transactions on Shabbos. And now someone asked, actually, the brother of Rabbi Akiva Eger, asked Rabbi Akiva Eger the following question. He says, we know that in Halacha, transactions are more sophisticated, they're more complex than the everyday transactions we're used to. You walk into the store, you want to buy a can of Arizona tea, so you put the money down on the counter and they give you your tea. Fine, pretty simple. It seems to all happen in one shot. In Halacha, we're able to break things down more, more fine-tuned, say, in the sense that you have to actually divide every transaction into two components. One is what we call the Maisa Kinyan, the action that's necessary to perform the transaction, and the Chalos Kinyan, when that sale takes effect. Okay, again, in most cases, in Halacha and in secular civil law, both of those are going to happen at the same time. But let me give you the following scenario, and this is a model which is true in all areas, all types of transactions. So we're used to selling the chametz on Erev Pesach to the guy in order to not have any issue of owning the chametz over the course of Yontif. Let's say, as it happens every once in a while, and it's happening this year, is Shabbos coming out, Erev Pesach Shabbos? Am I making that up? Next year? I don't know. It's a... What's that? It's the same, right, okay. I think it's supposed to happen one more time, and then it's going to be like another 30 years or something like that. I don't know. I'm not up on calendar, but it happened a couple times in the last 10 years or so. So what do you do in that case? Right? You can't meet the guy on what we are used to, again, Erev Yontif per se, because that's Shabbos. How are you going to sell him the chametz on Shabbos? Okay, or you know what? A better example, more practical. Every year, okay. Let's say normally the rabbi meets with the guy at 12 o'clock. Okay, let's assume 12 o'clock is at the time when one can still sell the chametz. It hasn't yet become prohibited. I'm just making up time. And this year, you know, the janitor of the shul calls up the rabbi and says, you know what? I'm just not going to be available at 12. I can meet you at 9, but I can't come at 12. So here's the problem: the rabbi sells all the chametz then, so all the people who want to have Cheerios for the next 3 hours are in trouble, because now it's going to belong to the non-Jew. Now, we try to promote healthy relations with whether it be the janitor of the shul or our neighbors, Jews, non-Jews alike. So you could keep eating the Cheerios, but that would be stealing from the guy. And we're not interested in stealing from the guy. So what does the rabbi do when he tells him, I can meet you at 9, I can't meet you at 12, and you want the community to enjoy their chametz for as long as they possibly can? So the answer is, we do just as we outlined a minute ago. You can divide the Maisa Kinyan, the action that's necessary as part of that deal, from the Chalos Kinyan, the point in which it actually kicks in. Okay, again, this is not something unfamiliar in secular law. There's actually 6 or 7 different Kinyanim that we do with a non-Jew in order to make sure that under all circumstances the sale is valid. So we'll do that with him at 9 a.m. with a stipulation that'll be written into the contract. Okay, that states the sale will not take effect for another 3 hours. Okay, again, nothing too complicated. Just the appreciation that there's more than one piece going on at the same time. So what Rabbi Akiva Eger's brother asked him was, I know I can't make a deal on Shabbos, but let's say for some reason I need something to kick in. I need something to take effect on Shabbos, but I can't. So let me set up all the details before Shabbos. We'll do the Maisa Kinyan. And we'll include in the contract and in the discussions preceding the actual deal that the effect of the kinyan will only take place the next day on Shabbos. Okay, make sense? Step one on Friday. Step two will happen automatically on Shabbos without any personal involvement. That was the shaila he asked, and he brought a fascinating proof from the laws of Pidyon HaBen. Okay, the following question was asked. The Trumas Hadeshin. Trumas Hadeshin, from the period of the Rishonim, very important figure because his rulings serve a major core percentage of the rulings that that define Ashkenazic halachic tradition. The Trumas Hadeshin was asked, we said before you can't make a Pidyon HaBen on Shabbos, but what if the 30th day falls out on Shabbos? Reason Makdim L'Mitzvos. I don't want to wait till the next day. I want to take care of it right now. What's the problem? Why don't I set up exactly what we just said before? I'll give the money to the Kohen before Shabbos, okay? And I'll tell him, this money's yours, but it's not yours yet. It's yours as the redemption of my son, the firstborn, with the provision that the sale, so to speak, the redemption of the pigeon of the firstborn will only kick in the next day after 30 days have actually elapsed. Okay, and therefore, what you have constructed is a deal, again, where the Maisa Kinyan takes place Erev Shabbos, the Chalos Kinyan takes place on Shabbos, but I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting back at home, I'm in shul, whatever I'm doing, and I'm not involved in any give or take, and the Pidyon HaBen should kick in. That was the question that the Truma Tzedeshin was asked. And he answered in a very interesting way. He said, there's two problems with your suggestion. Everyone understand the suggestion? Okay. The proposition has two flaws. The first thing he says is that you're going to have a problem with the bracha. When are you going to make the bracha? Right? We have a klal, we have a general principle in halacha, that you always make a bracha that pertains to a mitzvah over lasiyasan, immediately prior to the actual performance. Right? You light Hanukkah candles, you make a shereka shonam mitzvah, sabbat zivana lahazlik national Shabbos, and you light the candle, Shachanukah, and you light the candle. Okay, Shabbos is a little more complicated because, you know, you have to, you can't make the bracha first, whatever, but we'll keep that aside. Let's talk about Hanukkah. Hanukkah, you make the bracha, you light the candle. Okay, it wouldn't make any sense for me to make the bracha and then 10 minutes later light the candles. Okay, we're careful not to speak between making the bracha on a mitzvah and performing the mitzvah, the same way we're careful not to speak between making a bracha on some food and actually eating. So he says, when are you going to make the bracha? You want to make the bracha on Friday? You can't make the bracha on Friday. You haven't actually performed the mitzvah, right? Because all you did was give the money to the Kohen, but there wasn't any practical result. The Pidyon HaBen didn't happen yet. Okay, option number two. Why don't we make the bracha at, you know, 11:59, whatever point in time on the clock we determined is when the Pidyon HaBen should take effect. That's when you'll make the bracha. He says, you can't do that either, because also, you look throughout halacha, you never have a bracha that's completely disconnected from a ma'aseh mitzvah. Like, again, going back to that example of Hanukkah, you... What's that?
Bir chametz.
Bir chametz. So bir chametz, you make the bracha at night, right? When you begin...
You finish the action with the burning of the chametz.
That's fine. But as long as I did something, I did. We know the v'dikas chametz, checking for the chametz, is part of that elongated process. But at least I'm careful.
But the ma'aseh... You started the kinyan process before Shabbos.
Right.
So you started the process.
Right. Okay. Okay. So I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. You're saying the same way that bedikas chametz is step one to ultimately burning and destroying the chametz. So perhaps the ma'aseh kinyan is the step one of the chalos kinyan. It's an interesting suggestion. I'm not sure it's exactly the same thing because it could be. Yeah, it could be the ma'aseh kinyan is really just the setup. It's the, you know, the prerequisite for the chalos to actually kick in. This is a very good question, but I don't want to get off track. A very good point. But the Truma Tzedeshin seemed to accept that that by making the bracha on Shabbos, you'd be making a bracha that isn't really connected to any specific ma'aseh mitzvah. Okay, that was problem number one. Problem number two is the old Jackie Mason issue. Okay, Jackie Mason was famous for saying that if you want to encapsulate what every Jewish holiday is about, what was the line? They tried to kill us, we won, let's eat. Okay, so thank you very much. So he says the problem is a Pidyon HaBen, traditionally, is supposed to come in conjunction with the Sudas Mitzvah. Okay? A bris has a Sudas Mitzvah, a wedding has a Sudas Mitzvah. Right? What's the point? Why do we make a Sudas Mitzvah? So the reason why you make a Sudas Mitzvah, he explained, is Pirsume Mitzvah. Okay? There is an inyan to publicize the fact that it's a type of a Kiddush Hashem, that the mitzvah is taking place. Pidyon HaBen is not a very common mitzvah, it doesn't happen every day. We make a big deal about it in order to celebrate and express and manifest and publicize the fact that a mitzvah was done. Okay, so again, he makes a similar observation. How are you going to have Pirsume Mitzvah when you haven't done anything? It looks almost like a joke. You did the transaction before Shabbos, it kicks in automatically, and everyone's, you know, it's like New Year's, 3, 2, 1, you know, and now the child is redeemed, and we're all going to sit down and eat. It just doesn't seem right, okay? That's not the way that we normally orchestrate a Sudas Mitzvah. It's supposed to be in conjunction with the performance of the mitzvah, because if you're trying to be Mefarsim, you're trying to publicize the mitzvah, so what are we looking at? Looking over there, looking over there, there's no, it's all abstract. There's no way to really pinpoint where the mitzvah is, because, again, it's all happening in a very passive way, okay? So now note, this is what Rabbi Akiva Eiger points out. What are the two problems that Truma Tzedeshin tells us? First problem is, you can't make a bracha. Second problem is, you're stuck with the Sudas Mitzvah. Right? What could he have said is the problem in setting up such a deal? He could have said that what you're doing is Mekach U'Memkar on Shabbos. That if, in fact, it's prohibited to set up a deal before Shabbos so it'll kick in automatically on Shabbos. So that should have been the first thing and maybe the only thing that Truma's Hadeshin should have discussed. He should have said, forget it, your suggestion of setting up the Pidyon HaBen before Shabbos so it kicks in on Shabbos doesn't work because you're passively, but albeit involved in Mekach HaMemkar on Shabbos, right? That's what he should have said. Rather, what conclusion should we draw? We should conclude that the only problem is the bracha. The only problem is the Sudas Mitzvah. But fundamentally, the transaction is permissible. There's no problem with making such a transaction on on Erev Shabbos, such that it will kick in on Shabbos, again, regardless of the fact that, yeah, it's my business deal, but I didn't do anything on Shabbos. Okay, so from that source, Rav Eger posits that, let's use the eBay suggestion, okay? I put in a bid, and it's going to end on Shabbos, right? So everything I did is before Shabbos. The auction ends on Shabbos, so I'm the winner of the auction, okay? So what I've done is what Rabbi Kivega was talking about, which seems to be permissible from the Jewish edition. You set everything up before Shabbos, it kicks in on Shabbos, we're all good. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein pokes a little hole in what Rabbi Kivega draws from this Jewish edition. Let me ask you the following question. Imagine the following scenario. You're at a Pidyon HaBen. Father of the child comes up with his 5 coins, approaches the Kohen. Kohen is holding the baby and says, okay, we're ready to go. And the Kohen says, nah, no thanks. You know, I'll take the kid. Appreciate it. Change my mind. Okay? So now, imagine if the Kohen would try to, you know, walk away. So I doubt he'd make it through the door. Okay? But so what's the reason for that? Why can he not get away with that? Why has that never happened before? I hope it never happened. Okay, but the reason that the Kohen can't get away with that, Rav Moshe Feinstein points out, is because, hold on a second, you want to call Pidyon HaBen a form of a transaction, you're right. You're right. In the sense that we call it a redemption because I hand them the money and that gives me the right to take back the child and that redeems the child from the auspices of Kodesh Baruch Hu because Hashem saved the Jewish firstborns in Mitzrayim and killed the Egyptian firstborn. Okay, fine. So for whatever reason, we call it a pidyon. Okay, but it's not, it classically, Moshe also points out, pidyon means that I transfer Kedusha from one item and I put it on something else. None of that is going on over here. Again, for whatever reason, we refer to it as a pidyon is not something which, we don't have to get into it right now, whatever the reason is, he actually refers to it as some sort of secret, some sort of sod behind that terminology, but at the end of the day, it's not really a transaction. So just because the Trumas Hadeshin permitted that type of deal to set it up before Shabbos and have it kick in on Shabbos doesn't necessarily mean just because it works by Pidyon HaBen doesn't mean it's going to work by eBay. eBay, something is really going to change hands. I'm going to give some money, he's going to give me the item that I'm purchasing, that I'm bidding on, and it's a real transaction. So maybe if you can get away with it fundamentally in the case of the Trumas Hadeshin, but you can't necessarily pull it off. It may not be permissible to have this kinyan that's set up before Shabbos to kick in automatically on Shabbos. Okay, so there's a discussion back and forth. At the end of the day, Kiva Eger is not so convinced, and Rav Moshe is not convinced that it's permissible. Okay, so you're going to be stuck with the eBay possibility. We're going to adopt a makil position against that of Kiva Eger. It seems that in Klal Yisrael, the minhag has become to permit this type of transaction. Why? I sort of gave it away before when I mentioned what happens when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. So that is a case where everyone, the world over, has to set up a deal with the non-Jew where all the details of the transaction, the Maisakin, will be performed before Shabbos and will kick in on Shabbos itself. Okay, there's no other option because you can't bring him in and write a contract and do the transaction and exchange money on Shabbos itself, and that's Erev Yontif. So you're stuck. So the only option we have is to set it up before Shabbos, have it kick in on Shabbos, and the fact that we have adopted that practice when necessary seems to indicate that the minig is not like Rabbi Kiva Eger, and we can permit a transaction that takes place, again, basically before Shabbos and actually kicks in on Shabbos itself. Make sense? Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
What about an eBay automatic
bids? Automatic bids, right?
On your behalf? So that would be
there, the bid's going to have it on Shabbos itself. Good question. Okay, I'm going to try to get back to that. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Quick. You know what? Do you mind if I hold the question until the end? Just I want to make sure we get through it, and I apologize. Okay, because some of the basic questions will hopefully be answered soon. Okay. In the interest of being as you know as far-reaching as possible, we're going to try, however, to work within the framework we just described, but also, even according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, it could be that much of what we're doing would be permissible anyway. Okay, and one, we'll say the starting point for that is the following question. Let's assume for the moment, like Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Now, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says you can't set up the kinyan to start before Shabbos and happen kicking on Shabbos. So what about my Shabbos clock? Okay, what about a Shabbos clock? Am I allowed to set the clock to turn on the light in the middle of Shabbos, go off in the middle of Shabbos? So it's generally accepted that it is. Parenthetically, I would add, it's a little known fact, I'm not suggesting anyone change their practice, but Rav Moshe Feinstein actually was not in favor of Shabbos clocks. He says that if Chazal were around nowadays, in the same way they prohibited a malacha to be done through a non-Jew, then Chazal would have said the same thing when it comes to a Shabbos clock. Again, it was not commonly accepted for many reasons. I think Rav Moshe, perhaps in the Tshuva himself, acknowledges that it wasn't that practice wasn't widely accepted in all areas. But again, common practice is to use a Shabbos clock. All right, people can set sprinklers to go on Shabbos morning with a timer that they set before Shabbos. So where does that come from? So that comes from, just going to make reference to it, source number 11 on page 2. The Gemara tells us Machlokes Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai as to the laws of Shvisas Kalim, okay, is in the same way that I'm not allowed to perform a malacha, are my possessions allowed to be engaged in malacha on Shabbos, okay? That actually is Machlokes Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. So it could be Beis Shammai, perhaps, would not permit you to set a Shabbos clock because your item, your possession, is going to be performing a malacha, so to speak. Okay, but Beis Hillel permits it. Okay, and this is the basis for why many poskim allow one to send a fax from America to Israel at a time when it's already Israel, already Shabbos in Israel. Okay, because for me it's not Shabbos, and that guy doesn't have to shut off his fax machine because it's not prohibited for his possessions, his machines, his equipment, his computers to be doing things on their own as long as the owner doesn't do anything on Shabbos itself. So that's the basis for Shabbos clock. So why would Rabbi Akiva Eiger prohibit the transaction that was done before Shabbos? Right? Why should that be any different? So the Avnei Nezer in source number 3 suggests source number 12. Sorry, on page 3 uses the framework we mentioned before. He says because in every type of transaction there's two points. There's a Maisa Kinyan and the Chalos Kinyan. Okay? And even though we suggested that the Chalos Kinyan, when it kicks in, happens automatically, happens without any human involvement, he says let's look at the following scenario. Okay, Chas V'Shalom, we should never know from such things, but let's just pretend it was true. Okay? Let's say it's kind of weird, but let's say on Shabbos. Okay? On Shabbos, a person turns on the gas, okay, and before the fire, comes up off the stove, person dies, okay. Sounds a little strange, okay. So we would still associate the Maisa Malacha, he says, with that person, who, even though he died, but he did the action that's prohibited of igniting the fire on Shabbos. I think that's the model he uses. More important is the other side of the coin. Let's say on a Tuesday, okay. A person walks into a store and makes such a deal. I'm going to give you. I'm going to make a kinyan on the merchandise with a condition that it will kick in an hour from now. Okay, I'm making a kinyan right now. The deal will kick in an hour from now, and then he dies. Okay, so what's all of it? Does that transaction go through? No, right? Because someone who's dead, okay, cannot affect a kinyan because since the transacting entity that he represents does not exist at the time when the deal is supposed to happen. So if he's not around, right, all of his possessions already belong to his inheritors. Okay, I know it sounds strange, but what he's trying to bring out is that an individual is as much involved and necessary at the time that he does a Maisa Kinyan as he is when he does the Chalos Kinyan. So therefore. Therefore, when you do the action before Shabbos, but it kicks in on Shabbos, you are still an active entity in that process on Shabbos itself. When I set the Shabbos clock before Shabbos and the light goes on 10 hours later, I didn't have anything to do with that. Everything was set in motion before. Whereas when it comes to a business transaction, I set in motion before, But if I'm not around when it actually is supposed to kick in, it's not going to go. So therefore, he is an active entity at the time when the deal kicks in. Okay? If that was a little confusing, it's not necessary to for going further. So don't lose too much sleep over it. Okay. So the first.
But just really quickly, but with eBay, even if the person, it doesn't work that way, because even if the person dies, I would assume the transaction is.
Okay,
still,
so we're going to come back to that. We're actually going to. We're going to
have to air what.
We're going
to.
That's a good question. We're going to take a look at that. Believe it or not, so not exactly the same case, but similar. Okay, what? Anyone want to guess what the first precedent in modern technology, modern business, in the last 120 years or so, the precedent that we can use as a model for online transactions. Think about automated transactions. Okay, so you have ATM machines, and going back a little bit further, you have vending machines. First vending machine in New York was built in 1888. It was a gum machine that you could find them on train platforms in the subway. Thank you very much, Wikipedia. In the earlier part of the 20th century, Postkin were faced with that type of question. What if someone owns vending machines and wants to have an operation and doesn't want to shut down every vending machine across the city, Erev Shabbos, is he allowed to do it? So fascinating, just interesting historically, socially and historically. Look at source number 14, the Tshuvas of the Marshag, again, the early part of the 20th century. The storyline is great. Alvar she'elaschol b'kli hanikra automat. Regarding your question about an automat, okay, some sort of vending machine, she'neschadish b'itam alolo, recently, a recent innovation, she'menichan also b'chutz b'shizarabim, you put it in a public area, u'misimin b'socha tzikarlach v'shchokolad. Okay, put in candies and chocolate. But when nice al open zeh, how does it work? Shemisha mashuk basocha matbeah, you haniktzav, you put in some coin, bat hatzikralach or hatchokolad, yachal tov teva katana, you open up a little box, biyachalika haschorav adamatbeah, and you can take the food, you can take whatever snack you bought in exchange for the cash. V'ata sheila, kevin shi omedes b'chutz, gam b'shabbos kodesh, now it's standing out there on Shabbos. We have anashim akum or Yisraelim lo miley, a non-Jew or a non-from Jew is going to come and buy. V'yichu atikalach atchokolad v'yashlichu sham hamatbea gam b'Shabbos, and what they're going to come and put the money in on Shabbos. Ein kan la Yisrael bal atamat anal Israel. Im ein kan la Yisrael bal atamat anal Israel al mekach memkar b'Shabbos. Is the owner of the vending machine subject to the laws of mekach memkar by having his vending machine out there? Okay, now this is the punchline. This is great. I can't tell that this is shreila. So that is the basic gist of your question. Halacha lemaisa, kila avicha yeshno kli hanal. You just came back from Israel, and you realize for the last 20 years your father's been running a vending machine business, and you come to the rabbi. Rabbi, do I have to tell my father to shut down his vending machine business? Okay. So that's the shaila. So the Maharshag initially deals with Rabbi Akiva Eiger's suggestion, and says, maybe this is a problem. Maybe this is a problem because, yes, you set up everything beforehand. You put the vending machine there so that if someone comes along and wants to make a purchase on Shabbos itself, everything will go automatically without any human involvement. And according to Rabbi Eiger, we said that's a problem. We said you can't set up a transaction to happen automatically. Okay, you have set in place a system where one could argue this is even worse. Because the actual Maisakin in the transaction, that candy is going to transfer hands on Shabbos itself. Good, you set it up before Shabbos. But maybe you should be responsible because at the end of the day, someone's putting a coin into your machine, which means you acquire the coin, and you are transferring to their possession the candy bar. Okay? So according to Rabbi Akiva, it could be problematic. So the Marshag responded, and this is echoed by other poskim as well, just sort of survey the issues at hand. He's not 100% sure, as I mentioned before, if we accept the prohibition of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. But there are reasons why we could get around, again, even Rabbi Akiva Eiger's prohibition. So one thing you could do, he says, is you'll make the following stipulation. Before Shabbos, or one time when you put the vending machine in place, you will have in mind that any money that's put into my machine, okay, on Shabbos, I will not acquire until Shabbos is over. Interesting way around it. Okay, yes, the person's putting the money in my machine. But if I'm walking down the street and a non-Jewish person comes and puts a $10 bill in my pocket while I'm on the way to shul, I've never seen this guy before. I don't know where he's coming from. I didn't ask him for his $10 bill. So did I involuntarily am forced to acquire and make a transaction that's prohibited on Shabbos? Of course not. So if I stipulate that any money that comes into my machine is not mine until Shabbos is over, I'm good. Now, the truth is, someone could break into the machine, take all the money, and say, ha ha ha, you know, it's not yours yet. But we're assuming it's locked, and that's not going to happen. Okay? But you could make such a stipulation so that nothing will kick in until after Shabbos. Okay, but how do I permit the guy who's purchasing to take it? Aren't I allowing him to take, on Shabbos, and therefore I'm transferring it into his possession? So the Marshag offers the following suggestion. He said, what was Rabbi Kiva talking about? Rabbi Kiva was talking about a situation where you make a stipulation. It's Friday afternoon. Okay? It's Friday afternoon. We're doing the Maisa Kinyan, and it will kick in on Shabbos. Okay? That was the stipulation. When I put the vending machine out there, I have no idea what's going to happen. I certainly didn't make any, you know, guarantee. I didn't make any deal, any contract that the deal that something's going to happen on Shabbos. He wants to come along and put the money in the machine and take his candy bar on Shabbos. I didn't ask him to do that. Maybe Rabbi Kiva Eger was machmir because, again, you orchestrated such that Shabbos will perforce definitely, be the time when this deal kicks in. But if I put the vending machine out there, then I didn't ask him to come on this day. That's his choice. So maybe even Rabbi Kiva Eger would allow it. Now this is very important because that also is far-reaching. Other poskim said I can't have a vending machine in a place where there are Jews. It's lifnei iver. If someone who's not from is going to come and put money into the machine and buy a candy bar, so then I'm responsible ultimately, right? Because I gave him the opportunity to purchase. So there we can respond similarly that no, you have no responsibility in such a case because after all, I didn't ask him to buy on Shabbos. It's out there the whole week. Why should I be responsible for that? Once we work with this framework that says there's no guarantee it's going to happen on Shabbos, so then let's go back to eBay again. So I put in a bid on Tuesday, and the auction is supposed to end on Shabbos. But when I place a bid, I have no idea that I'm actually going to be the winning bidder, right? I have no idea. Even when I make an automatic up on the bid, someone could beat me on that, okay? So yes, the auction is supposed to run up on Shabbos, but when I put that money down, there's really no way to guarantee that I'm going to be making the purchase. So according to this line of thinking, could be even according to Rabbi Kiva Eger, such a setup would be permissible because the deal was not orchestrated in such a manner where it will definitely kick in on Shabbos itself. Okay. Now, the same thing is true. Others have pointed out that if you have a website where you're not selling merchandise, right? If you think about it, selling merchandise on a website is really, it's questionable if it's really part of this whole discussion because whenever someone agrees to buy something or eBay for that matter, they're going to send it. They're going to send it via mail. And halachically, you don't really acquire possession of an object until it's really in your hands, until it's in your reshus, in your domain. So even if the eBay auction kicks in, it ends on Shabbos, but my kinyan doesn't really happen until Shabbos itself. And just like the kinyan doesn't happen, the truth is, we'll go one step more lenient, my agreement to bid has leniency in its own right. If you look at source number 18, okay, an excerpt from the eBay rules. I want an item, but no longer want to buy it. What should I do? Okay? A bidder commitment to buy on eBay is considered a contract, and you're obligated to purchase the item. However, if you feel that you have a legitimate reason for not buying the item, you can contact the seller and explain your situation. So now, what does it say? It says it's a commitment to buy. It's an obligation to purchase the item. Right? Now, what happens? If I just decide, I didn't really like this thing to begin with. So what's going to happen? So someone's going to give me negative feedback. All right, so, maybe I'll have a hard time selling something next time. But in the end of the day, the guy's not going to get his money. Maybe he'll get something because, eBay has, insurance policies, all right? But he's not going to get any money from me. So when I place a bid on Tuesday, again, even if I know it's going to kick in on Shabbos, bottom line, all I've done is agree to pay. I haven't actually even decided to make the transaction altogether. Now, again, proper form and proper following the rules is that I should go ahead and complete the sale and complete the purchase. But all I've done is obligate myself. Look at source number 17. The Magen Avraham tells us, right? We said earlier, you're not allowed to consecrate something. You're not allowed to give something to the Beis Hamikdash, to a shul. Listel tzedakah. Anyone ever been to a shul where they bid on aliyas, right? I'm going to give $1,000 to Elaine Matir Yonah. So Avagav, the Magdishin, the Magen Avraham says, how is that permissible? Everyone does it. Even though you can't actually donate your car to the shul, the prohibition is actually a definite, concrete, specific item in front of you. That's what you can't give to the shul. That's very similar to a monetary transaction, a deal like in a store. But Chazal never prohibited under this rubric of Mekach HaMemkar one to just pledge, okay? Pledge to buy something on eBay, okay? Pledge to buy the item that you want on the auction, or pledge $1,000 to get the aliyah. So you have yet another factor which permits this. And we'll throw in one more item from the, we'll say now from the buyer's perspective, right? The buyer, you might say, okay, at the end of the day, let's say I have like an automatic bill pay set up, that when I win the auction, it bills my credit card, right? Okay, so then I actually am going to be purchasing it on Shabbos, right? So now here it might be a little bit different. It may depend on whether you use PayPal or you're charging your credit card directly. Okay, why? Because if you have a PayPal account and you actually have cash in the account so that the money could transfer immediately, right? But if you're familiar with the way credit cards work, there's something called a batch system. A batch system means, let's say I go into the grocery store and I swipe my credit card. So now, does the money transfer right then? No. At the end of the day, and sometimes 40 to 72 hours later, all the information of all the transactions over the last 2-3 days is transferred to the bank or the credit card company, which then goes to the bank, takes all the money, and then sends the money by wire, by computer, to the supermarket. So even when you swipe your card, even when you agree to charge your credit card automatically on Shabbos, that doesn't mean that you're going to be paying the person on Shabbos. You may just have, again, set up a system that 2-3 days later, your credit card is going to be charged. Okay? So when you put all these factors together, the actual transaction seems to be pretty clean, Shabbos and Yom Tov. Again, according to those who are Machmir, I understand Rabbi Willig is a little bit more Machmir. I don't want to go too much on record. But someone told me that their Con Ed bill is set to pay automatically on a Tuesday. A couple years ago, Yom Tov was on a Tuesday. And again, it was the end of the month, and the Con Ed bill was supposed to be paid. And Rabbi Willig told him that he had to pay separately or call them up and change the date of the of the bill payment because it was going to fall out on Yom Tov. Because Rabbi Willig is a little more concerned about the Shukiva Eger, which prohibits even something which takes place in a totally passive form. Okay, not everyone agrees to that. One reason why you would disagree is that, look, it's true, my billing cycle ends on Tuesday. Okay, but you know what, if they charge me a day earlier or a day later, I wouldn't care. Okay, the Con Ed happens to, you know, want to charge me as soon as they can. They don't want to delay it. They don't want to do it earlier because, you know, that's wouldn't be very nice. Okay, but it's their decision to take the money out of my account on Yom Tov, not my decision. Okay, so it's another reason why there's room to be lenient in terms of behavior. Okay, I want to close with the following question. There's one more thing that we didn't address. Everything we spoke about so far, and I apologize for speaking quickly. My goal was to try to finish in time for Marv. Not sure if I was able to do that. I apologize. Little emergency on my way over here. But the business side of things is all good. Okay, according to this approach, what we've outlined. What about Maris Ayin? Okay, what if Art Scroll, okay, or Schwartz's Yarmulke Company, okay, has a website and wants to, I don't know how many people are going buying yarmulkes on Shabbos on the website, but in theory, if someone wanted, they were interested in an Art Scroll book, they wanted to buy it, okay? So they would go to Art Scroll's website. Yeah, it's true that we could figure out a way in which the Mekach HaMemkar is not actually happening on Shabbos per se, but perhaps you may run into situations where it certainly looks like a very Jewish company, a very obviously frum organization, is doing business on Shabbos. They're taking your money. You put in your credit card, they're taking your money. Okay? So this is so interesting that B&H Photo, which is a very well-known Jewish company, very well-known for being Jewish, but it is a very Jewish company. It's the largest non-chain camera retailer around. So if you go to their website, right? Everyone knows they're Jewish, so how do they get around this Maris Ayin issue? So here is something I printed out yesterday. B&H Holiday Schedule, Autumn 2012. Okay? And it's amazing. I'll leave it here for you to take a look at. It says when Rosh Hashanah Eve is. This is the B&H Superstore and offices. Go to the store in the city. Rosh Hashanah Eve, they close at 1 o'clock. Rosh Hashanah, closed. Yom Kippur, closed. Sukkot Eve, closed at 1 p.m. Website, online ordering will be unavailable on the following days. Sunday, September 16th, 7 p.m., through Tuesday, September 18th at 8:15 Eastern Standard Time when Yom Tov is over. Okay, this is amazing, okay? Because they are concerned, which, again, this is a legitimate concern, that it's Maris Ayin for people to see this business seemingly operating on Shabbos. Okay, and I think, I've never done this actually, obviously, there's a way to like retro view websites, like to see what a website looks like on a different day. I don't know how to do it. There's a website that can, what's it called?
Wayback Machine,
that's what it's called?
Yeah, okay. It's called the Wayback Machine based on an old cartoon.
Right, okay. So if you go and look at what B&H's website looks like on Shabbos or Yom Tov, you can fill up your cart and do whatever you do, but like there's no submit button there. So you can't complete the order, okay? Because as it says, online ordering just isn't available. There is another way around this, okay? This is a chiddush. It's a big chiddush. Such a chiddush Hashem. There was an article in the Times. I tried to pull it up for this year. I wasn't able to, but there was a journalist or a blogger. I don't know, someone who was writing for the Times. I think it was a non-from Jew. I think, and he was looking for a camera. And he was looking online for a camera, and he came across B&H, and he tried to order it, and he was blown away that he couldn't order on Shabbos. And he didn't really know what Shabbos was, and he looked into it. Now, I don't think the end of the story is like, and he became from, and he married a from girl. But that would be a nice ending. But he wrote an article, I think it was in the Times, about how it was mind-blowing for him. He never encountered someone who took their religion more importantly than their business. And it's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Tremendous Kiddush Hashem. How do other companies get around it? So I think I ordered from Greenbaum Judaica a couple years ago, and I think it was around Sukkot time. And it said at the bottom of the screen, any orders received between whatever Sukkot was and the end of Sukkot will not be processed until the following Monday. Okay, which truth is most businesses that's the way it's going to run anyway if you order on the weekends. So people aren't so surprised to see that. It's a little bit strange on Yantif, but as long as they stipulate that, by the way, we're not going to be looking at your purchase until the Yantif is over, so that's another way to pretty clearly state that there's no concerns of Maris Ayin, there's no concerns of Shabbos and Yantif, and the business is not continuing to.
But then they can do it on Shabbos since they've stated
that. It'll stay open, but they're not going to look or react to any of the orders that come in until, because they're Jewish also, they're not going to open up, they're not going to turn on their computer to see what orders came in until Shabbos is over. We're not talking about where the robot's doing everything on your own. It's a Judaic store, so they don't they don't pack up the books that you order them until after the end of it's over. Okay, I want to first of all, I just want to thank again our hostesses. I want to thank everyone here this time, everyone who's been here in the past, the entire year. This is officially maybe Shabbos will be my last official public appearance in Mount Sinai. My internship is running up, and Mirza Hashem is a very qualified person to take my place next year. But I just want to thank everyone for making my experience wonderful. It was great to be part of the community for this year. I hope to pop by in Shul, Mirza Hashem, in the future. I'm still going to be living here. I live across the street from Rabbi Schwartz. So there's something about rabbis on the YU side, right over on 186th Street. But thank you for being part of things, and I appreciate everyone's input and everyone's attendance. And it was great learning with everybody. Have a wonderful summer and a wonderful year ahead.